This is a Crestview Bible podcast. For more information, visit crestviewhutch.org.
It's great to be back with you. I feel like I've been traveling a lot lately. I was reminiscing with Julie. I think we've missed like 3 out of 7 Sundays, and for me, that's like an eternity. Feels like a lot. So I missed you guys. I love you dearly, and it's so good to see your all's faces and to be with you. This morning, we're going to be looking at, as Phil said, we have the week of prayer, and so I've been tasked to set our minds on that, get us into that mode of praying and what we're praying for, which is to pray for unreached people groups. So to that end, we're going to be in Luke chapter 10, Luke 10:2. So if you have your Bibles, you can turn there, and it's only going to be one verse, but I do not promise that it's going to be short. So yes, Luke 10:2, and so I can get started there. Now, I may be one of those guys. You ever heard those guys that it's like, oh, you haven't heard this? You haven't heard about this person? You haven't heard this news? Where have you been? Under a rock? I may or may not be like, I try not to be like that guy. But if I am that guy, I'm sorry. I hate being that guy. So just apologies in advance if that happens. But what I want to do this morning is to have a global vision of what God is doing around the world. Sometimes we can be very short-sighted. We could just be in our little worlds here, in our little communities, in our state, but God is on the move around the world. Yes, he's moving locally. Yes, he's moving here in Hutchinson. All that we're doing over the last year and what we'll continue to do in 2022, pressing into how we can love our neighbors, how we can love our community, all that God is up to in our homes, in our neighborhoods, in our workplaces, in our schools. Yes, he is working. Now, we might think that our nation is going to pot, but that is not the case around the world. Around the world, God is doing something. He is at work, and it's not going to stop. The Church of Jesus Christ is exploding in countries that were dark in other generations. You guys know Papua New Guinea? Maybe some of you in the older generation, that was like the frontier. That was like the front lines of pioneer missions. But Papua New Guinea is almost 99% Christian today. That's amazing. Those of you who are like shaking your heads like, I can't believe that, because back like 40 years ago, there was no Christians to be found. But because of God being on the move, because of workers going, look at where it's at today. And so there's more of that. And God is exploding the church in places like Iran, in Libya, in Vietnam. Jesus is making himself known in some incredible ways in these places. The scriptures are ringing true. Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 14 says that the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of God. That's happening today. Psalm 96 says, sing to the Lord, bless his name, tell of his salvation from day to day, declare his glory among the nations, his marvelous works among all the peoples. So the question is, are we participating in that? How can we participate in that? We're just coming out of the Christmas season, right? Where we are celebrating the amazing act of God becoming man, entering creation, Jesus taking on human flesh in order to redeem a people from every nation. He's brought reconciliation and peace and joy and redemption. He atones for the sin of people and crushed the enemy, crushed sin and death. Jesus went to the cross and rose from the grave for us, for our joy. This is the reason that he came. That's why we're celebrating Christmas. Now imagine for a moment that you have never heard that message. You've never known who Jesus is. Just imagine for a moment how your life would be different, not knowing this hope, this joy, this peace, a peace that is indescribable, a joy that is indescribable, that comes from Jesus. Who would you be apart from Christ? Now that's the reality of 3 billion people around the world. That's over, now you think that we have about 8 billion people, so we're talking about over a third of the world has no idea, has no access to knowing that grand story, knowing the reconciliation that Jesus offers. We have been given a grace. We have been given a kindness that you were born in a time and a place, and that you've had ample opportunity to hear the greatest news in all the world. But one third of the world is what experts would call unreached. That's why if you see on your prayer guide the week of prayer for unreached people groups. So what do we mean by unreached? Well, unreached means that these people groups have no church. They have very little Christian presence, if any at all. Many of them do not have access to any sort of a Bible. As one person put it, that the Christian population is so insignificant that the mission of God is insurmountable without outside help from other people. I think that's a great description of an unreached people group. So it doesn't mean that there's like nobody there. That would be unengaged. I'm going to get nerdy. But unengaged means that there is absolutely zero presence. There's no Christians. There's no Bible in their own language. That would be unengaged. But there's unreached, which means that there is such little population that the would be almost insurmountable to create a church in those areas. For example, let me just kind of put this in tangible things. For example, the Tajik people in Tajikistan. Anybody know where Tajikistan is? Tajikistan, it's south of Russia and north of Afghanistan. So if you're in that area, it's right in there. It has a population of about 7 million people. So what, like 3 times the population of Kansas. 7 million people there. And there is about a few hundred believers there out of 7 million. Now imagine, we have about less than 100 probably in this room. Suppose we had all the seats full here. That's about a couple of hundred maybe seats in here. Imagine all the seats were full and we told you, go to the state of Missouri and evangelize the whole state of Missouri. That'd be pretty insurmountable, even for the people in this room, right? For us to go, because that's about the same land area and about the same population is Tajikistan. So that's the state of that's what we mean by unreached people groups. So you might say, well, how? In 2022, with all of our advances, how can they would be considered as unreached? Well, I'm not talking about jungle people, right? I'm not talking about very remote villages, like a third of the populations in remote villages have no access. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about like those people like in Beijing, Beijing that they see no Christians. They don't see any churches because the church can't be visible. The Bibles are outlawed and the government censors the internet. So even if they wanted to find the answers, they can't find them. And that's just Beijing, which has about 22 million people, the third largest city in China, right? China has 40 of those cities that are more populous than the state of Kansas. So these numbers are easy to point at. These are just like numbers. I understand they're probably just like, oh, that's just stats. Well, remember, these are people. These are people that were created, made in the image and likeness of God. And they are being born, they will be born, they will be raised, they will work, they will marry, they will live, they will suffer, and they will die without any of the hope that we know in the gospel of Jesus Christ. And more than that, they are sinners before a holy God. The reality of one-third of the world is an eternity in hell. This is why I am so passionate about unreached people groups. These people will not just spend a few years in agony, but in eternity. In hell, you are no closer to the end from when you first began. We love that line in that song, right? In Amazing Grace. That there we will not even reach the end of days when we first started. That's the reality of people in hell also. Well, you might say, that's not fair. It's not fair. How come they don't get to have the chance to have the peace of God like we do? It's not fair that he would send them to an eternity in hell. Well, Romans doesn't let us say that. Romans chapter 1 does not let us say that. Romans 1, 19 to 22 says that, "For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. So they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking. Their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools, exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things." So as David Platt once said, they have just enough knowledge of God to damn them to hell for eternity. So that's the bad news. But here's the good news. Luke chapter 10, verse 2. Enter Luke chapter 10, verse 2. "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray earnestly to the Lord of harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." So the first thing is the reality here. Jesus gives us the reality of this mission. The first thing is that the harvest is plentiful. That's the reality. It's not a guessing game. Do they? When we go there, will they accept this? No, Jesus is promising that when we go to these people, there are people who are ready and are hungry to know peace with God. They are ready to hear the gospel. Jesus is telling us that these aren't going to be rocky soils. They're not going to be thorny soils, but you guys remember the parable of the soils, right? So you have some that get scattered onto the rock, some that get scattered on the sidewalk, some that are on the thorns, and some that are going into good soil. And they will produce 30-fold, 60-fold, 100-fold. And this, he says, these are areas where there's good soil and the harvest is ready. They're ready to produce 30, 60, 100-fold fruit. Jesus isn't dragging them in, kicking and screaming. They want to know. They know that their idols, their religion, their government are foolish, and it's not the answer. It's become empty to them. Of course, there's going to be people that hear and that reject, but there are others that the Spirit has made ready. John chapter 10, verses 14 to 16 says, "I am the good shepherd." This is Jesus speaking. "I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, I lay down my life for the sheep. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there'll be one flock and one shepherd." Let me tell you a story about a man named Hiram. When I tell stories, I'm going to be using pseudonyms. So his name is, we'll call him Hiram. I met him a couple of years ago, and he told me his story. He grew up just outside of Delhi. Delhi is a city of about 25 million people. Grew up outside of that city. Did not know any, there was no Christians at all in his area. Zero Christians. He didn't even know that Jesus existed growing up. He went to the temple daily, offered his sacrifices, worshipped his idols, but he felt empty, knew that this could not be the answer. In his teenage years, he started to ask questions of the temple priests, just couldn't get the answers he was looking for, still coming up empty. Finally, when he got into college, he was in a classroom, and a Muslim man had just come back from the city of Delhi, the big metropolitan area, had just come from there and went to the class, and the teacher was not there at that moment, and he comes in and he says, "Look at this track, this Christian track. They're trying to evangelize me. What rubbish garbage is this?" And he's going off on his rant in front of the classroom about the evils of Christianity as this Muslim man. And he goes and he throws that track in the wastebasket. So my friend Hiram, he says, why is he so upset about this religion that I've never even heard of? And he goes and he picks up the track out of that wastebasket, reads it, and believes in Jesus that day. He says, "This is the truth I've finally been looking for." The harvest is plentiful, brothers and sisters. He was ready and he was hungry. It took a Muslim guy trying to throw a Christian tract in the trash can for him to hear the gospel. God is on the move. He's working. Whatever means necessary, he's going to use. But it was a story to me to realize, man, people are hungry to hear this truth. This is how hungry people are. So what's the problem? If the harvest is plentiful, what's the problem? Well, the thing that Jesus said is the need. Here's the need. But the laborers are few. My friend Hiram did not have a laborer that actually went to him. There wasn't enough people to go around. Their laborers were few. There's not enough workers going and grabbing this harvest. How can they hear unless they are sent? Romans 10:14. How are they to call on him in whom they have not believed? And how are they to believe in whom they have never heard? And how are they to hear unless someone's preaching? And how are they to preach unless they are sent? Even after all these years, this statement rings true. There is not enough workers being sent out. Almost every missions organization that I hear of are losing missionaries. I've gone to a few conferences. I'm engaged in the missionary world. And almost every organization says, yes, our numbers are depleting every year. Fewer and fewer people want to go out. Fewer people want to leave their comfortability and go into the harvest. We are struggling. Why? Why are there so few? Why are there so few laborers that are willing to go? Well, it's hard work. It's hard work. You have to leave your families. You have to leave your home. You're going to places that you don't understand. I could talk a long time about how hard it is in other areas, in other parts of the world. But what drives people to go? It's the glory of the King. It's to see his perfect, wonderful, gracious, righteous rule happening all around the world. To see the light of Christ shine in the darkest of places. And when you see that, when you see light being come out of darkness, no adrenaline junkie can compare to that. I'm telling you, it is so adrenaline rushing to see lives transformed by the gospel of Jesus Christ, to see baptisms happening in areas where it's like, wow, you came from this to that, and only Jesus can do that. Let me tell you another story, a story of Ram. Ram, again, another pseudonym. His story is much like Hiram's story. He was the only one from his village to hear the gospel. He was actually on the way. He had lived a life of drunkenness, of just all kinds of social evils. And I've tried everything, and almost like the Ecclesiastes passage, like, I've tried everything, and it's just leaving me empty. And so he was actually on his way to go and kill himself. to commit suicide. And as he's on his way, another person intercepts him, noticed the downtroddenness of his face, and begins to share the gospel with this person. Again, he's from a village, no Christian is there. And he has heard the gospel from this person, and at that moment, believes in Jesus. And his life is transformed, and he never found that man again. Where did that man come from? He didn't know. Today, he has a couple of his family members have come to faith in Christ, and he is working in his village to bring. He has a bicycle. After he came to faith, he was poor, and all he had was a bicycle, and he was going around village to village on his bicycle, going door to door, telling people, "This is the hope of Christ. This is the answer, people." Banging on doors and preaching the gospel to them. That's all he could do is just with a bicycle, door to door, and I'm trying to preach the gospel to you. So the laborers were few for Ram. He was only one person living in a state that has over 125 million people in it. A state in India has 125, the one that I was in, 125 million people. It's insurmountable. More laborers are needed for this harvest. So we've seen the reality of the harvest and the need for workers to go, but how can we help? What's our role in this? What's the action? The action, then, Jesus says, therefore, pray earnestly. Three powerful words, three important words. Therefore, this means action on our part. Not a few select people who can go, but everyone can do this. Everyone. Therefore, because of the harvest is plentiful and the workers are few, therefore, everyone get on board with this. Everyone pray. It's the first step. I love how he says that's the first step. It's not, therefore, get everybody to go. He says, therefore, pray. Not go, not do, but just talk to Jesus about this. Talk to the commander in charge. And not just once. He says, therefore, pray earnestly. Not flippantly, but pleading with Jesus, constantly bringing this before him. And thank God, this is the easiest thing to do. But it's also the hardest. Because how often do we obey this? You realize that this is a command, right? This isn't like, if you have time, or you might want to do this. No, therefore, pray. We like to focus on maybe some iffy commands of Jesus, like conscience issues, like cuss words or coming to church on every Sunday. We focus on those commands. But here's a direct command right here. Pray. Pray earnestly for this harvest. Pray earnestly that workers would go. Are you doing this on a regular basis? Is this a pattern in your life? This is a straight up black and white command. Will you join this? Will you be part of something that's bigger than your cocoon? Will you join a global movement? Will you love your neighbor around the world enough to plead with Christ on their behalf? So then you say, well, how? So glad you asked. How can I be involved in this? Well, I'll give you a couple of tools here. One is, this is Luke 10:2. So some people have come up with putting an alarm on your phone at 10 o'clock and 2 minutes. So 10:02, put an alarm on your phone and just say, "For at 10:02 every day, I'm going to pray for an unreached people group. I'm going to pray for the harvest. I'm going to pray that the Lord would send out more workers for this harvest." So that's a great, easy thing to do. Set an alarm on your phone, 10:02. You can use the week of prayer guide. See, the reason I designed it in this way is because you slip it out right here, and guess what you have? What are these? Bookmarks, right? Bookmarks for your Bible. So, you know, we usually have like a little sheet of paper, and they're also like thick, right? So you usually have a piece of paper that has it all in there, and then what happens a few weeks later, it ends up in the garbage can, right? So this is not meant to go in the garbage. It's meant to keep with you throughout the year, not just throughout the week, but throughout the year. Have this on you, and you know you have these prayer requests right there. You can be praying earnestly every day to the Lord of the harvest for these unreached places. You can add them to prayer cards. Some of you have family prayer, where you pray in the mornings or you pray in the evenings, like you pray with your kids before bed at the nightly prayer. What an opportunity to say every evening with your kids, with your families, we're going to pray for a different unreached people group. We're going to pray for a different country. What an impact that can have on your children. To say this is your regular, you're going to be praying for something bigger than yourself. I know some of you are part of prayer groups where you meet together. Make it a part of your weekly rhythm or your monthly rhythm when you meet for prayer to pray for a different country around the world. And then you're thinking, wait a minute, how do I know what an unreached people group is? How do I know what people group to pray for? Write this down. JoshuaProject.net. JoshuaProject.net. Some of you guys are still looking at me. I'm not joking. Get your pen out or your device out and plug in JoshuaProject.net. It shows you all of the 17,000 people groups that experts, we don't have all the answers, but what experts have said, how many people groups are there in the world, and the 7,000 that are yet still unreached. And you can sign up. This is a website. It's a very full, expansive website where it'll show you all the different people groups. And we'll actually, you can set daily emails here's a new one to pray for. And you get a little bit of information of who they are, where they're at, what's their stats, kind of a little profile card, if you will. And so every day in your inbox, you'll get an email that says, pray for this people group. There's an app. For those of you who like apps, go to the App Store or your Google Play Store, whatever phone you have, and type in Joshua Project, and that on that app you can get notifications to pray for a different people group every day. So now there's no excuse, right? So now you can't say, "Well, I don't know what to pray for. No, there is resources that the Lord has given each one of us to pray. Now it's just a matter of if we're going to be disciplined for that action. You can also use Operation World. Operation World is another resource that I use pretty regularly. Again, I'm not going to spend time describing that. Just Google Operation World, and there's all kinds of resources there. Okay, so that's the action that we can all do. Now the confidence. Jesus says, pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest. This is Jesus' mission from start to finish. He's the commander, and we are appealing to him. We aren't appealing to someone we hope can make a difference, but the only one who can actually make a difference, because he is the Lord of the harvest. He is the reason that we can pray earnestly. This is our confidence in prayer. It's not just going up to some magic hopefulness, but a guy who is actually in charge, who has control. We are praying that his kingdom comes and he makes it happen. Remember, these unreached people groups are his sheep. They're his people. John 10:27, my sheep hear my voice and I know them. He knows every single one. Revelation 5:9, at the very end of the ages, John, when he's looking up at the throne room of the Lord, and he hears them, he hears their new song saying, worthy are you to take a scroll and to open its seals, for you were slain, and by your blood you ransomed people for God from every tribe, every language, every people, every nation. And you have made them a kingdom and priests to our God, and they shall reign on the earth. Every 17,000 people group that we know will stand. There will be at least one person from each one of those that will stand before the Lord. So that's the confidence that we can have. It's not a hopeful pipe dream. Well, if we work hard enough, we can do this. No, it will be done. It's just a matter of, are we going to join into that? Are we going to be joined into something bigger than us? I'm so glad the mission doesn't depend on me. I'm so glad it doesn't depend upon you and your prayer life. It depends upon Him, but we are invited into this. We are invited to appeal to the Lord of the harvest and accomplish His mission. Another story, one of Melody. She's one that I've met through our missions organization. And she has a very similar story to Hiram's and to Ram's. Grew up believing that Christianity was for old women. She knew, growing up, she knew about as much of Christianity as you know about Hinduism, right? So as much as you know about that religion, that's how much she would know about Christianity. And that's just, it's just old women believe that. It's just an old wives' tale. But she started to question after she had, she was studying in college, studied so hard for this particular academic award, and she finally got the academic award that she had worked tirelessly for months. And she got the award. She got it. She looked at it. That's what I got this for all my work. I got this. It's got to be something more than that. Got to be something more. But she doesn't know anybody. She doesn't know any Christians. She doesn't know anybody around. But she's a part of a college who has an English class. She knows this English teacher. It's from another country. So she goes and she talks to that English teacher who, by the way, is actually a missionary, but she can't come out and say that because she would be busted. So she has a full-time job as an English teacher in the college. She goes to them and she hears the gospel and she believes, studies the Bible daily with this English teacher. And now she's with my mission board being sent to other people groups around China with her husband. It's amazing, right? It's amazing that that the Lord of the Harvest knew Melody by name and saying, I'm going to put you in front of this English teacher who I brought from another country so that you could hear the gospel and believe in me and have reconciliation. That's the Lord of the Harvest. Who else can do that besides the Lord of the Harvest? So this is who we're praying to. And then Jesus doesn't end here. He tells us what He is going to do. The Lord of the Harvest is going to send out laborers into His harvest, the expectation. You know, a lot of people, when they read Luke 10:2, they say, yes, I need to pray for the Lord of the Harvest to send out laborers into harvest, and we stop there. Because what does He do? He goes and He sends. He sends 72 people out into this harvest. Not the 12, get that? He doesn't send the 12. He sends the 72 others out into the mission. The reaction should not be, well, I hope this happens somehow, sometime, some way. But this is a call now to stand up. It's a call to go. I am ready. I am ready for someone to come to me and say, Luke, I want to go. I want to be sent to the nations. So who is eager? Who is desirous to stand up and say, I'm going to go? Talk to me. Come afterwards and come talk to me and I can get you connected. This doesn't mean that you're going to go today. You might not be qualified and that's okay. That's part of my job, actually, at my missions organization, is missionaries come to me and I have to decide whether now is the right time or maybe later on, right? So you might come to me and I might say, great, but I want that zeal. I want that eagerness. Is somebody going to stand up and say, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to leave. Do you have a willing and ready heart that says yes? I want to tell you one last story. Story of Troy and Leanne McGee. They're a couple in their late 50s, living in Jacksonville, Florida. They're successful business owners. They had a print shop business that had 6 locations across the Jacksonville area. So pretty substantial business in a pretty mid-sized to big market, right? They have 8 grandchildren that live in the area. They're taking care of their aging parents, and they're taking care of their own health concerns. They have many different health complications of their own, being in their late 50s. But next, in a month of March, they are headed to Uganda, and they have chosen to leave everything behind, despite all of the things, despite all of the excuses. Think of all the things. Successful business. They decided we're going to sell our business and sell all 6 locations and go to Uganda. We're going to say goodbye to our 4 children and 8 grandchildren. We are going to go despite not the level of health care that we need, but we're going to go and serve the Lord in Uganda and reach people for the gospel. And I have the privilege to coach them. I started coaching them back in September, and I get to coach them all the way up until they leave. And they're right now in the process of selling everything off and selling off their house, selling off their businesses and everything to get everything ready to go by March. Think about that. I could talk to any number of you, and those would be valid excuses. I can't go. I got this business. I can't go. I've got family here. I can't go. I've got health issues. It's not stopping Troy and Leanne. It's not stopping the Lord to send them out and to press upon their souls to say, you need to go. The Lord is pressing on you, saying, I need to go. Don't immediately stuff that down and say, I don't think I can. I did that. I'm telling you, I did that once. When the call first came to me to go to India, I said, that's ridiculous. There's no way. And I'm so glad that eventually the Lord turned me around and changed my mind and say, yes, you can go. I can't tell you how much it changed my life and how many others have said, man, I'm so glad that you came to me in South Asia. I know that this was supposed to be a sermon on prayer, and I hardly touched on it, but I hope that I've convinced you for the need to pray for these unreached places. Jesus has shown us the reality and the need and given us a command to pray and ask him to keep sending laborers into this harvest. You might be struggling to even get out of bed this morning. You might say, I can hardly look in front of me with all the junk that's happening in my own life. How can I look at something even beyond that? Well, I'm pleading with you this morning to look at something bigger than yourself. That God is doing an incredible work around the world, and he's inviting you to look beyond that and see yourself as part of this global movement to make his glory known. And you might be crying out today, come, Lord Jesus, just come. Will you come and just end and bring us to yourself? Well, let me finish with this, that you want Jesus to come. Matthew chapter 24, verse 14 says, and the gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. Now, I know there's a lot of controversy around that, but my position on this verse is that Jesus actually said that when the gospel is preached everywhere, then I'm going to come. That's kind of what he said. So if you want the end to come, my suggestion to you would be start praying to the Lord of the harvest to send out more laborers, to preach the gospel everywhere, because I want the end to come. Pray that he would raise up gospel workers to be sent to these unreached people and places.